Welcome to the Expressive Mom Show. Miriam Slosberg here, and it is great to have you along. Parents and teachers are bombarded with stress and are constantly facing challenges in regards to time and stress management. Therefore, they become very frustrated. And today, I'll be talking to Gay O'Brien, and I'm going to give you a brief background on Gay before we jump into the discussion. Gay O'Brien is a catalyst for transformational change in business. She coaches, speaks, and provides leadership workshops to companies to enhance their performance by increasing their customer base, maximizing their profits, and just making their businesses a lot more efficient. She is very aware of the challenges that businesses face and skillfully coaches corporations and small businesses around the world to navigate a pathway towards their goals, dreams, and aspirations so they can show their magnificent selves to the world. Gay O'Brien offers coaching, workshops, and home study programs to individuals. People who have big dreams for the future are empowered to develop their highest potential by discovering their passions, values, and beliefs, discarding their limiting beliefs, and implementing stress reduction, time management, and goal-setting techniques to embrace peak performance in their lives, relationships, business, and health. Gay O'Brien shares her insights in an inspirational educational and entertaining way with international media, including radio, newspapers, and magazines, and with groups of individuals who desire to make their greatest contribution to the planet and co-create a more enlightened world. However, we're not going to be talking about business with the exception of mompreneurs who are faced with raising a family, maintaining a home, and running a business all at once. We're going to be talking more about how parents and teachers can manage stress and become more efficient. And we're going to be also talking about NLP, and we're going to talk more about that very soon. But first, I'd love to welcome Gay out of Central Queensland, Australia. Hello, Gay. How are you?
Good, thanks, Miriam. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. And, wow, thank you so much for calling from all the way from Australia. Very, very, very glad you're here. So I have a few questions. Now, other than what I introduced here, could you tell us more about yourself and what you do?
Yeah, sure. I actually work with individuals and businesses to help them improve their performance. And I also do a lot of work. I do a lot of workshops with individuals to really find out what they want to do with their life. So I do what's called Discovering Your Passion workshops, and I work with a lot of people that are transitioning from one occupation to another, or from an occupation to a business, or perhaps they're leaving behind a marriage or a relationship, or their children have left home and they want to find something else to do. So I quite often help people who are in transition.
Okay. Well, very good. So, you know, I know that you're very influential in NLP. So could you tell us more about what NLP entails?
Sure. NLP stands for Neuro-Linguistic Programming. Mm-hmm. And the neuro part is to do with the nervous system and the five senses. So the five senses are visual, auditory, kinesthetic, olfactory, that's to do with smell, and gustatory, which is taste. And the linguistic part refers to the ability to code, order, and give meaning to experiences using pictures, sounds, feelings, tastes, smells, and self-talk. So, and all of that means, and the programming part refers to the process of discovering and using the five senses to achieve specific outcomes. So what that really means is we take information in through our senses and we filter it, we give it a meaning, and the meaning really is how we judge our world. But what NLP does is it teaches you how to change the meaning if that meaning is not working for you. So we have all sorts of tools and techniques that help you to change the meaning of your world. If for example, you've had bad experiences, we give you opportunities to reinterpret those experiences so that you can learn from them and grow from them and really create better future outcomes for yourself.
Okay. Okay. Thanks for sharing that. And I do know that you had written a book, NLP Essentials for Teachers, The Art of Encouraging Excellence in Your Students. So can you tell us more about that and what propelled you to write that book?
Sure. Well, I actually come from an education and training business. And as you said earlier, I do run my own business now, my own education and training business and coaching business. And originally I started out as a teacher, and I was managing a large facility, and I found that I was getting quite stressed with you know, the workload and everything that was needing to be done. And I wanted to find a better way of doing things because I wanted to help more people. I wanted people to achieve their goals and achieve their outcomes, and I wanted to not be stressed myself. So I decided to study NLP, and I found that it gave me the tools to know what to say, how to say it, when to say it, and just be more, as well as having a much more positive mindset. So mm-hmm. it was really useful. And so I decided to write that book, and I called it a book for teachers, but really it's a book for parents. It's a book I've sold it to many entrepreneurs as well. It's really a book that gives you the tools to help you move forward. So it talks about empowering beliefs rather than having limiting beliefs. It talks about how to develop rapport. It talks about how to communicate in a positive way much more effectively than you may do currently.
Okay. Okay. Now, that's great. Thank you very much for sharing. So now, as far as teachers go, what NLP strategies would you say are the most useful for teachers and parents, you know, parents too, to use as teaching techniques?
Yeah, so it does have lots of teaching techniques in the book. It shows you how to use, you know, metaphors and storytelling and positive language patterns, how to use body language more effectively, so how to use what you say, with, you know, what words you use, what keywords you use, as well as how to use your body, as well as how to use your physiology, because quite often it's our physiology that really makes us, puts us in an excellent frame. And by that, what I mean is that we need to be breathing correctly. We need to always use breathing when we're communicating with others, so use deep breathing techniques, you know, really look at people, use our hands in a way that's going to work for us, and use key words. So when you're talking to someone, use the words use the language that they understand. And I know that sounds pretty obvious, but quite often we get caught up in our own language, in our own world. So really what NLP encourages us to do is really move into the other person's world and really find out what they're about and how they communicate. And that's the way you develop rapport with people.
Yes, that makes a lot of sense. And it's funny because people don't even think about that, so this is actually very, very useful. So what NLP strategies are helpful to use for behavior management as well?
Okay, so with behavior management, there's all of those things that we just talked about. So mm-hmm. it's really about the language. I actually have a whole chapter on behavior management in my book. And it's really about using the language that the person that you're talking to understands, obviously. I mean, otherwise, if you're not communicating in their language, then they really haven't got a clue what you're talking about. It's also about really what NLP refers to as framing. So you want to frame the behavior. You want to let the other person know that the boundaries or the borders of the behavior. So you want to set the context for the behavior. So how someone behaves in this context may not be how they behave in some other context. So what may be appropriate here may not be appropriate there. So in the classroom, for example, a certain type of behavior is appropriate. So obviously it's you need to consider everyone else in the room. So you need to be listening and working. If you're running around the room, well, that's not going to work because other people can't learn. So
right.
We need to set the context and let the student know what behaviour is expected. So expectations are really important. Expectations and framing and setting the boundaries are most important. So you set that up first and then you use the language that the student will understand. And you also let the student know, or even with your own children, let them know that they are much more than their behaviour. Their behaviour is only the tip of the iceberg. What they exhibit is not them. It is only part of them. And
yeah.
Quite often what we do is we might say, oh, you're a naughty child. But what we're really saying is the behaviour that you are exhibiting is not acceptable. Now, that's not the language you would say to the child. You would say something like, well, don't do that because this isn't the right thing to do in this situation. So we expect you to do something else. So we don't want you to do what you're doing because it's not acceptable. So it's the behaviour. And I think if we say that the child is naughty, then we're actually affecting their self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to make sure that we're not really getting too bogged down in that we are actually looking mostly at the behaviour. So, for example, we might say something like, we might give the child an eye message. So, for example, if they're not doing the right thing in class, you'd need to give them an eye message and say, you know, sit down now. So you're not saying don't run around the room. You're not giving a no message. You're giving a yes message. You're saying sit down now. And
mm-hmm.
You're saying it in a way that is commanding, but it is also open, but it is also, friendly to the child. Sit down now. So you're giving a smile. Sit down now. And you're actually lowering your voice at the end of the sentence, which, of course, is very easy for males to do. Females have to practice it a bit more. So we need to say, sit down now. So you kind of, you might even want to exaggerate that. And I actually discovered that with my dog a few years ago, and I don't mean to sound offensive in this situation, but I found that if I gave my dog, if I used a command tonality with my dog, he would obey me. Whereas if I raised my voice at the end of a sentence, like when you're asking a question, you raise your tone, and that didn't work for him. So using a command tonality definitely works in the classroom. So sit down now.
Yep.
And the expectation is that the child will sit down. And they pick up on that. And you might even just keep going with what you're doing. You're not focusing on it. You're not saying, you're not looking to make sure they do sit down. You're going on with what you're doing and you're making the assumption that they will sit down. And that way, too, you're not giving the attention seekers aren't getting attention. The attention is off them. They've been told what to do and then you've moved on to the next thing that you need to do.
Right. And, I would also imagine that once these strategies are introduced to these children, they probably fight it, especially if they're misbehaving a lot. They probably fight it at first. Is that true?
Well, they do. The thing is, though, that there's, that there are some children that are at the extreme end, and obviously mm-hmm. those strategies may not work with those sort of students. And then, you may need to employ other things. So they may have to be given extra attention. So they might have to work with someone else to help them develop those strategies. So they may need to be given a bit of one-on-one by someone else before they can actually implement that, teacher aid or someone else, a guidance officer or someone else who is a counsellor, someone who's working with them. If they have extreme behaviours, then that would be the case. But the majority of students, we're talking sort of, 90% of students will respond because they want, everybody wants to be accepted and everybody wants to be acknowledged and everybody wants to be part of what's going on. You know, we're social creatures and we want to know what the boundaries are. We want to know what the expectations are. And if we give those expectations in a positive way, then you know, most students will accept that. And those that don't have other issues that have to be dealt with first. And so, you know, this is for parents as well. So
yeah.
If parents set the expectation. And another thing you can do too is let them know in advance. So you might say something like, well, you know, in half an hour's time or in, you know, in 20 minutes, we're going to start doing reading our novel. Or and staying at home with parents, you might say, well, you know, dinner will be ready in half an hour, so that they know that that's coming up and they're not getting anxious now that the dinner isn't ready. So giving prior warning really helps, and it stops people from being anxious. So setting a positive language frame, you know, letting people know in advance what's coming up is really helpful. And really, if a student is doing something like running, you know, say they're running, you know, in the playground on the concrete or something, and it could be dangerous. Instead of saying, most people say, don't run on the concrete, but all you're doing is you get a picture, and because the mind can't process negatives, all you're doing is you have to actually think of the negative before you can think of the positive. So what you've got to do is you've got to think of running on the concrete first, before we can think, oh, I've got to do the opposite of that. So instead, if you say, walk on the concrete, then, or, you know, as the students are leaving the room, you might say, well, you know, remember to walk with your friend to the playground. You might say something like that. So you're just doing it in a really casual way. And so that then they know that they've got to walk to the playground with their friend. And they're not even considering running because they don't have an image of running in their head. And
So
quite often you see signs that say, you know, don't do this, don't do that. But really it would be much more beneficial if we really just stick to what we want people to do rather than what we don't want them to do.
Great,
so,
yes, that's the way of thinking. You're absolutely right.
Mm.
Yes,
mm.
Yeah, focus on the positive because a lot of us just focus on the negative, right? Okay, thank you. That's actually very valuable. So, you know what, now that you were talking about kids with, you know, different types of children, now I'm going to ask, how does NLP assist with managing students with special needs?
Well, actually, now that you should say that, that was actually my specialty. That's what I worked in that industry for 20
mm-hmm.
years.
Okay.
And I found that it was very useful for students with special needs because they're not Martians, they're not from Mars, they're actually people on this planet, and they do respond to the same techniques as everybody else. You know, they need love, they need certainty, they need boundaries.
Yes,
and
they do.
And they may take longer to process information, and that's
mm-hmm.
fine. So what we do is, as I said before, we give an instruction, but one very important thing we do is we wait. So we might say, you know, move into the classroom now and take your seat. And we wait. We allow them time to move and then take their seat. We don't assume that they're going to process it in a split second, even though it may be something they do every day. You know, maybe that
mm-hmm.
wasn't a perfect example, but, you know, they might be doing something like you might be sitting down, you might say, put your books away and then we'll go and do some artwork. So it might take them a moment put their books away. You might think that they're not following your instruction, but actually
mm-hmm.
they're processing what you have just said. So wait time is very useful because if you don't allow that wait time, you make the assumption that they're not following your instruction, and then you may want to give it again, and that can be quite annoying because you're giving it again, so they're still trying to process what you said before, and now they've got to try and process it again. So wait time is very useful for all students, all children, all people, but it's particularly useful for students with special needs. So you do that, and the other thing you do with special needs students is you break down the task. I mean, that's one of the techniques I use in my coaching program. I do break down, get people to do the tasks, one step at a time. But with students with special needs, you instead of giving them five tasks at once, you don't say do this and then do that and then do that, because they've only heard the first phrase. So you give them one instruction at a time and get them to do that one thing first.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, my son has mild autism, but he does have more moderate ADHD, and he's been in ABA therapy since he was very young, and he's doing quite well. And he actually can follow, like, 4 or 5-step instructions, and, his behavior is quite good, other than the fact that he likes to stick with his routine and his way of thinking, but he doesn't throw tantrums. He doesn't throw tantrums. He hasn't for years. I'm certain that the ABA therapy he's gotten has had aspects of NLP in it without me even knowing.
It really permeates everywhere. Like, it's been around now for, nearly 50 years, and it really does permeate, all aspects. It has kind of filtered through, I think, to a lot of aspects of society. Yeah, so as you said, the routine is really important. Students, it gives them certainty. If they know what the routine is, the daily routine, they know where things are kept, they know where they've got to sit, they know who they've got to work with or whatever. That is really helpful for them, because children with autism, information, there's a lot of information out there, and they get really caught up in all the different sensory stuff. So really, a routine, I think it really helps all people, but it particularly helps, students with special needs.
Right. And away from special needs, I'm going to ask this question as well. How does NLP cater for different learning styles? Because everyone learns differently.
So with NLP, they talk a lot about the visual, auditory, kinesthetic learning styles, and everybody actually learns best if they're given access to all the learning styles. So if you look at something when you learn it, you look at a picture or an image of something, you hear it, you hear the teacher speaking or you hear an audio program or whatever, you hear it. But then if you do something physical as well, so then you write it. So say, for example, you're learning spelling. If the teacher writes it on the board, if they say the word, they break it up into syllables, and then you write the word in your book. So that way you are getting all of the different learning styles. So, these days they say that there's like about 40% visual, 20% auditory, and 40% kinesthetic learners. And, kinesthetic learners are people that like to really get in and do it, the baker who bakes the bread and, the electrician and people like that. And, of course, the visual artists are obviously visual, and lots of teachers and trainers are obviously auditory, because they talk and they listen. So people tend to move into the sorts of occupations, if you like, or activities that favour a particular learning style. But I think that, we all certainly, obviously, have to access all the styles. But I think as teachers, we need to make sure, or trainers, we need to make sure that we give students opportunities to learn in all the styles, because we may not know, at least initially, we may not know what style the student has. So by actually teaching in multi-modalities, we're giving all students the opportunity to learn more effectively.
Right, right. And you know what? This is really effective for everybody. Everybody. Adults.
Oh, yeah.
Children. Everybody. You know, this is it's extremely useful for parents and teachers really to practice and to really, really, you know, keep consistent
totally.
With it. Yeah,
totally. Yeah.
Absolutely. So I'm going to finally ask you, how can people contact you and where can they purchase your book?
Yeah, sure. Now, there is actually, thinking about the learning styles, in my book there is actually an activity that you can go through, a little test that you can go through to find out what learning style that you are. But you can actually contact me through gayobrien.com. It's probably, if you go to gayobrien, gayeobrien.com, that will take you through to my website, and I have information there about my coaching programs, I also have online modules and workshops that I run. And my book is also available on that site as well. So that's where you can contact me, gayobrien.com.
Great. And where can people find you on Facebook and Twitter?
Okay. So on Twitter, my Twitter handle is gayobrien.
Mm-hmm.
And Facebook, it's Gay O'Brien as well. So
great.
That's one pretty easy to find.
Great. So what you're going to get and what everyone's going to get is a blog post and a recap of this podcast. And once the blog post is up, I'm going to share it, and I will let you know. Thank you so much, Gay. It was
wonderful
to have you here.
Thank you, Miriam.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks very much. I've enjoyed it. Thanks a lot.
Yes,
bye-bye.
You too. Me too. So you have a wonderful day, and I will have a great rest of the afternoon. And everybody, you have a great rest of the week. I will speak to you soon. Bye for now.
Bye.